Hello and welcome back to A Killer Podcast. My name is Freya Millard.
And I'm Amy Woodcock, and we are your hosts, I think. Are we?
Are we still your hosts? Who knows? How do you guys feel about us?
I don't know. Has someone taken over? Probably.
Yeah, it's been a while, guys. A little while. That's on us.
Just only a few months.
Yeah.
Just a few.
Look, guys, we're not here to justify ourselves, but... It's just this time of year, you know, it brings us back to life. When the sunshine comes back out, we come back out. You know, we're Geminis, we're June babies. This is our season.
This is our time to shine.
Absolutely.
Any other month is hibernation and we just don't do anything, okay?
No. We're like bears. That's how we operate. We go into like a long, long sleep from, you know, September to May. So yeah, you're lucky you get to see us at all.
We put so much energy into our summer months that we can't record any other time, obviously.
It's just impossible, you know? And we don't want to even have to explain to you what we had to do to get the energy to come back today. Like, oh, there was some sacrificial stuff.
It's a dark place, guys.
Yep.
It's a deep, dark place.
I don't want to go into the details. Amy will tell you. You know she loves to tell you the details, but...
Do you know, I'm going to try and turn a new leaf, you know? I think I've decided I'm going to be non-gruesome. No, that's a liar. That's a liar.
I was going to say, what? That's your brand.
I'm joking, guys. Don't you worry.
Oh, panic on Izzy's face. I can see it without even seeing it.
Yeah, she's like, what?
Devastation.
To be fair, I don't think there's anything too gruesome today, guys.
Isn't there?
So that's a good start, maybe.
We'll believe it once we've heard it. Let's see what you've got up your sleeve first.
I don't think there's anything too bad.
You're too bad and other people's too bad are very different things.
That is true. That is true. Mm. But yes, so if you guys don't remember, it is now my episode this time.
It is.
Because even I can't remember.
And this is also the historic crime season, because we had to remind ourselves, you know.
Honestly, guys, you wouldn't believe what we were just like. We were like, wait, what have we done? Where are we? What is this?
There was lots of questions, lots of existential moments in that discovery.
He was like, oh yeah, that's what we were doing. Okay.
Yeah, we got this. Yeah, so obviously this is episode 6. We said obviously this is for our own knowledge, not yours.
Yeah. You guys probably remember better than we do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
If you're listening and you're discovering this backlog kind of thing, this is great. For you, nothing happened.
Yeah. You're going to be very confused about what we're talking about. You're going to be like, what?
Yeah.
What?
But to all the people we've betrayed, we're sorry.
Yeah.
So sorry.
If they've even come back. I don't even know if people are going to come back.
I probably would abandon us by now. I'm like, you guys suck.
I would have. 100%.
Yeah. You know, we only had like, what was it, 3 listeners to begin with. And now it's just going to be us and Izzy, hopefully.
Yeah.
Please come back, Izzy.
Oh my God, what if she doesn't come back?
No! Oh my God, you know we've gone too far.
I'm a number one fan.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your episode today will entice her and some others back to listen to us. So
hopefully. That's a lot of pressure. Oh my God.
It is a lot of pressure. I'm sorry it landed like this, but do you want to give us a bit of an intro about what we're going to experience today and what you're going to talk to us about?
Well, today, guys, we are going to be talking about the Mafia. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh, that is exciting.
Let's hope I don't get put on any hit lists. I'm not going to lie, guys. I'm scared.
You've really been out to die this season.
I really have. What can I say?
Actually, that's why we disappeared, guys. If we're being brutally honest, it was because, you know.
We needed to make sure.
In the last few months, especially.
Oh my God, yeah. I didn't even think about that. I'm scared.
So Amy went undercover.
Maybe, I don't know. I'm going back into hiding. I'm going back in.
Yeah. Scrap this episode. We're done. Bye.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
After the whole assassination episode, you had to keep a low profile, didn't you? Well, that's basically what happened.
I really did. I'm not going to lie, guys. And now I've come back to do some more.
Yeah. You know what? I've got Russia on my ass, but this time I want the Mafia. Let's go. Let's go.
Let's mix it up. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you guys ready? Are you ready? I don't think I'm ready.
I'm ready. Which Mafia?
Well, that's what I'm gonna tell you about now.
Oh, quickly, tell us.
Before they run away.
Go, go, go.
Okay. So, for today's episode, I have decided to tell you the life and crimes of a member of the Mafia. And not just any member. This particular character was actually the leader of the Mafia at one point.
Big boy boss.
I know.
I'm assuming it's a boy. That's very misogynistic of me.
Oh my God. Well, yeah, it's historic crimes, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think you can assume.
Women can be mafia bosses too, Amy. God.
Not back in these times.
Yeah, true.
So, the person I'm telling a story about today is Lucky Luciano.
His Christian name.
Not quite, but he was actually born under the name of Salvatore Luciano. So Luciano was his surname. He went from Salvatore to Lucky.
Yeah, I actually really like that as a name as well, Salvatore. I think I would have stuck with that.
Yeah, but there's a reason for his name, which we'll obviously get to at some point. So Luciano was born in Sicily on November 24th, 1897. His parents were Antonio Luciano and Rosalia Caparelli. They also had four other children. Their names were, oh God, okay, I hate my life.
My favourite part. Give us the names, Amy. You got this.
Right, let's try this again. Bartolomeo.
Sounds like a Ninja Turtle brother that hasn't been discovered yet.
Yes.
Or like a distant cousin.
Yeah. Oh God, I bet I've butchered that. We got Giuseppe. I can say that one.
Oh yes, we've had a Giuseppe before.
Yeah. And there's also Philippa and Concetta. So Luciano's father worked in a sulfur mine in Sicily, and it was said that his father was very persistent in the fact that he wanted to move his family and himself to America. So in April 1906, this happened. They moved to America, and Luciano was 8 years old at the time. And they settled themselves down in Manhattan. Apparently this was like a popular area for Italian immigrants to move to at the time. So they just kind of like joined the community, I guess.
Nice.
The next we hear about Luciano's life is at the age of 14, where he dropped out of school and began to work instead.
Not supposed to do that. Education matters.
Well, it's a cute little job. He had a job of delivering hats for $7 a week.
That is cute, but he's 14. Dude needs an education.
I know, but to be fair, back then I think that was more of a normal thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, true. Your life expectancy was like 20 anyway, so, you know, at this point you're hitting retirement.
You've got to start early. So he was delivering his hats, living his life, but one day he managed to win $244 in a dice game, which is, you know, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Well, from $7 a week to 244, that's a pay rise.
Yeah. So he decided, you know what? I don't need to sell hats anymore. I've got a new life I want to lead. And instead, he began a life of getting money from the streets by pickpocketing.
Oh.
Standard.
Big jump, I think.
He's gone from zero to 100, honestly.
Yeah. I guess it's the same fast money, isn't it? You know, just quick win, quick win.
He's like, do you know what? I don't want to work that hard for my money. I just want to have it.
Yeah, I get that.
I suppose pickpocketing is probably quite hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Never tried it, personally.
Are you sure?
I swear.
That's what you've really been up to this year.
Oh, yeah. Wait, don't out me.
Oh, no, sorry. Carry it on.
So he started pickpocketing, doing his thing, and he thought, you know what? This isn't far enough for me. I want to take it a step further. So he decided his next move would be to create a gang, obviously.
Of pickpocketers. And was one of the members Oliver Twist?
I think so.
I know this story.
I know this one. So he decided to join a different gang. He was part of this gang called Five Points Gang. And this was sort of his entrance into the criminal world. And he decided, you know what? Salvatore isn't really a great name for a gang member. And he changed his name to Charles.
What? Salvatore's way better.
Honestly, I think so too.
Charles just seems a bit, I don't know. Like, I think Salvatore doesn't really feel like a mafia name either, but it's a lovely name. Like, I wouldn't choose Charles over it.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange choice. But yeah, he decided, you know what? Not Salvatore anymore, I'm going to be Charles. So this is obviously before he got his nickname of Lucky. But he decided he didn't want to just be any average street gang member. He didn't want to just take part in small petty crimes, of course. He was an entrepreneur, so he started up a business.
Ooh, probably not legitimate.
Yeah, he started off a little business of offering protection to young Jewish people from the Italian and Irish gangs for 10 cents a week.
Aww.
So he was going to the Jewish kids and being like, do you know what? You pay me 10 cents a week, I'll make sure no one beats you up. That was his business.
That seems like quite nice.
I mean,
overall,
it's not the worst thing he could have done.
Yeah, you are profiting off children by the sounds of it, but you know, there's worse things to do in the gang world, I think.
Exactly. Like the other thing he got involved in A bit of pimping.
Oh, yes. That was more what I expected.
Yeah, he was protecting Jewish kids on one side and then getting involved in pimping on the other side. So he's got a whole thing going.
Yes. Interesting.
Honestly, his life just gets wilder and wilder. You're going to be so excited. So around this time, he met another future mobster named Meyer Lansky. And it is said that they met when Luciano tried to get Lansky to pay him money for protection on his way home from school because he was from a Jewish family.
Ah.
But Lansky refused. He was like, nah, I'm good, thank you. This made Luciano think, do you know what? I respect this kid. I like him. I'm going to become his friend.
Oh, okay. That's a nice budding relationship.
Yeah. So like, oh, you didn't give me money. You didn't give in to my threats. So I like you. I'm going to be your friend.
That's how all friendships bloom, isn't it?
Exactly. That's how we met, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. I was like, Amy, I will protect you. You must pay me. And then you're like, I don't need protection, bitch. And I was like, oh, sounds.
Like, I'm good. I don't have any money.
Yeah. I'll take my life. They can have it. I'm broke. Yeah. I recall that vividly when we were 3 years old. Yeah.
That definitely happened. So yeah, so they became friends and they kind of formed sort of a partnership. They kind of were like doing their little businesses together sort of thing. And they also then became friends with another guy called Benjamin Bugsy Siegel.
Ooh, Bugsy.
He's also involved now.
Interesting.
Ooh. Yeah. There was the three of them. We've got Luciana, Lansky and Bugsy. And they did their little protection things again for the kids. Being little businessmen, as they do. So at this point, we get to when Prohibition started in America. So in the 1920s. So they obviously saw another business idea and they were like, ooh, let's go into bootlegging a bit of alcohol.
Ooh, moonshine.
So just, you know, quite standard, kind of what you expect to happen.
Well, anything that becomes illegal, as we know to this day, becomes pretty much you just handing it over to, you know, organised crime. You're basically saying, you run it then.
Exactly. So they're like, yep.
You can't have people in the shadows running it if you legalise it.
Yeah, exactly. So around this time, so Luciana started getting a bit bigger in the organised crime mafia world. And he started to make acquaintances with a lot of the big shots of the time, such as Frank Costello.
Ooh.
And Vito Genovese. So yeah, he started to really get himself out there in the world. And soon enough, he ended up being hired by the Lower Manhattan gang boss, Joe Masseria, and he was hired to be one of his gunmen. So he started making waves, you know, from selling hats on the streets to being proper involved in the mafia.
To being Joe's gunman. Whoa.
Yeah. Living his best life.
That is progress.
Honestly.
Talk about quick career progression.
Exactly.
It's a selling point for joining the mafia a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Climb the ranks quickly.
Exactly. So, yeah, he became a gunman for one guy, and then he was also working for a gambler called Arnold Rothstein, who helped him with his bootlegging business. And he actually also had Costello and Genovese involved in that as well. So they all sort of like were working together, doing all their bits and bobs with the alcohol.
Nice. Sell that moonshine.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen in that my local farm shop, they sell moonshine.
Nice.
And I really want to buy
Isn't
some.
It's supposed to be really strong.
Is it?
I don't really know what it is. I'm not going to lie.
It's like toffee flavoured moonshine is what they've got there.
Oh, that sounds nice.
It's a small bottle and it's like 30 quid for the bottle. And I was like, what?
Bloody hell.
I know. And this is supposed to be the cheap stuff that they used to sell at like a fraction of the price. Like, talk about irony. It's just...
Yeah. I suppose now it's more of like a historic, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I suppose it's not very big over here. I don't know.
I don't know if we had much of an era of banning. Like, it was obviously in Ireland, but...
Don't think we would have had it.
Yeah. Interesting, though.
Love the alcohol over
I'll get some moonshine to try for us next time we're together. I need I need something to celebrate to make it worthwhile, you know?
Yeah.
I can't sit at home and drink a little bottle of moonshine to myself.
I mean, you could, but you might be frowned upon.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe slightly judged.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, if anyone has actually tried moonshine, is it good? Before I
spend your money,
tell me if it's worth it.
I mean, if it's toffee flavoured, that sounds nice.
I know, I thought that. That's what sold me. I was like, I'm sure it's going to be like a sweet little drink. But yeah, Americans, if you're listening, you know, point me in the right direction.
Should we drink moonshine? So by 1925, Luciano was actually grossing over $12 million a year.
Damn.
He was on the money. And then he actually also made a personal income of $4 million
What?
Just from illegal gambling and his bootlegging. So there was a lot of money in being in the mafia. Honestly, I'm being swayed.
Yeah, this kid is rich, boy. That is not bad. And that time, that point in history as well, that's even more insane. Like, that's a lot of money today, but you're talking like 100 years ago.
Exactly. That is a lot of money.
Mad.
So soon enough, Luciana rose up in the ranks of Masera's criminal group and actually became his top aide. He really was, you know, working his way up quite quickly. But his rise in power came with more than just a good spot in the gang. It also put him in prime position for attacks.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, the higher up you get, the more people want you dead, unfortunately.
Flip side of all the glory, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. In late 1929, some rivals kidnapped him. They beat him, slit his throat, and stabbed him multiple times with an ice pick.
Jesus!
They basically left him nearly dead.
He survived
it? But he survived.
What?
Yeah.
Slit throat?
Yeah. He just came out with, like, lots of scars. He's had a droopy eye. Like, he was a bit disfigured from it all, but he survived. And this is said to be how he got his name Lucky.
Ah, it makes sense.
Obviously, people thought, you know, when you go through that, you probably should be dead.
Yeah, definitely. A slit throat isn't, like, a small injury, is it? Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Quick recovery from that.
Then the next step of his life came when Masera, his, like, boss, had himself a new main rival. So it was another gang who was led by Salvatore Maranzano.
Ooh, another Salvatore.
See, this guy kept it.
Yeah.
It is a great name.
It's a great name. God damn it.
So yeah, he had this rival group and the rivalry became even worse when one of Masera's own men called Gaetano Reyna switched from his group over to his rival's group. So obviously he wasn't happy about that.
Ooh, yeah, no, that's like the big no-no in any mafia gang group, isn't it?
You can't just switch sides.
You don't switch to the rivals. Jesus.
That's nasty. How could he?
That's like a certain death sentence, surely.
Oh, 100%. And that is what went on to happen. Surprise!
Surprise! Gang members don't like it when you betray them.
Yeah. So Masera actually ordered Lucky to arrange the murder. And so Reyna was murdered on the 26th of February, 1930. And this actually then led to the rivalry escalating then, because obviously they'd then killed a member of the rival group. So it started a big old war between the two groups.
I mean, technically, he was their member first.
Well, yeah. It's hard to, you know.
But yeah, no, at the time he was a rival. So like, I get the war.
Yeah. So it's just all a bit all over the place. But yeah. So this then led to the big war between the groups, and it was a very violent and bloody war of power because it basically came down to who controlled the Italian-American mafia.
Jeez.
That was pretty much what the overarching thing was. You know, these two gang bosses, both of them wanted to be the big boss.
Mm.
Basically, just had to try and kill the other one to get rid of them.
That is like such high stakes promotion stuff, isn't it? Like, you know, you're a bit thankful that you're in like careers where, you know, when you want to get up the ladder or whatever, you might just need to do a bit more work, or you gotta get a bit more qualified.
Don't need to kill a rival.
But no, this one's like you have to murder someone to get up there. Like, ooh,
yeah, it's
damn.
Yeah. So they have this big war going on. They were trying to kill each other. But during this war, Lucky started to become annoyed by the old ways of the gang leaders, such as Masera and Maranzano. And these leaders were known as Mustache Petes, which basically meant that they followed the old traditional ways of the mafia leaders. So they believed in upholding these principles that were developed in Italy. They were very old-fashioned.
Hmm.
So they believed that they couldn't work with anybody who wasn't Italian. And like, they even went as far as not trusting anyone who wasn't born in Sicily. Like, he just wasn't impressed by it. He was like, do you know what? I think we need to expand. We need to develop.
Yeah, we need more allies.
He was very forward thinking.
Yeah. So Mustache Pete's are like, I guess, the Karens of the time.
Yeah. They're just very old fashioned, setting in their ways. Mm. Like, they didn't like anybody who wasn't Italian.
Yeah.
Just very closed minded people.
I mean, you know, that's not how the world works. You got to get rid of those Mustache Pete's.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what Lucky was thinking. He was like, do you know what? I don't believe in any of this. He wanted to open up the pool and to work with anyone. You know, he liked all like the Jewish and Irish gangs. He was like making connections with them. So he started started to create his own ties with these other gangs and try and like build up his own little reputation with them, get their trust. So this then led him to think, do you know what? I'm ready to get rid of my boss now.
Ooh.
So he decided he wanted to get rid of his boss, Masira.
Masira has not had the best allies, I'm going to be honest.
He really hasn't.
Got to be pickier about who you have near you.
Yeah, hasn't picked very
Maybe
well.
If you look outside of Sicily-born people... Or Sicilians. They ain't serving you well, my friend.
Exactly. But as I said earlier, the higher you get up, you know, the more people want to kill you, including the people around you.
True.
Part of the job, I guess, isn't it?
I guess so. Jeez.
So in early 1931, Lucky decided it was time to switch sides in the war. He decided, you know what, Masira, I'm done with you now. I'm going to move over and make a deal with your rival, Maranzano.
Ooh.
And he made a deal with him. So he would get Masira killed if he could get position of second in command to Maranzano.
Wow. So he's kind of like uniting all the gang by getting rid of one. Maybe it's less bloodshed overall.
Yeah, that was kind of his plan, basically. He decided, you know what? The side he was on was losing. They weren't doing well. And he decided, you know what? If I just get rid of my boss, join the other side, we can make one big group.
Yeah.
Happy days.
I mean, that's the thing with gangs and stuff, isn't it? Like, you go down with that wrong metaphor, but you go down with the ship. Like, you know, his boss can't really.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he could, but they don't tend to want to back down. They'd rather die in, like, a blaze of glory than admit or make a deal.
Yeah.
That's gonna, you know, lose power or status. So
yeah,
sometimes it will have to be the people below that like take it into their own hands, I guess.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And that's what he did. So he set up a dinner for his boss at this nice little seafood place on Coney Island.
Mm.
During the meal, Lucky excused himself to go to the bathroom, and whilst he was gone, he had four of his associates come in and shoot Masira to death.
Oh, cold.
At least he treated him to a little meal beforehand, I guess.
Yeah, that's one way to look at
Have
it.
Have a nice little seafood platter and then you can die.
And then a couple of bullets. That's the dessert.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So as you were kind of saying, so with the death of this one boss, the war ended and Maranzano was recognised as the boss of the Italian-American gangs of New York.
Ooh.
Yeah, he basically won. He took over. So he decided to create this thing called the Five Families.
Ah.
So it was basically just five different groups, sort of like five little gangs, and each one of them had a leader, but he was like the overarching leader of them.
Yes.
So he actually made Lucky the leader of one of these gangs. So he was the leader of one of the five families. So Lucky played along with all these changes. He was like, okay, I'll do that. I'll be a leader of one of your gangs. But really, he was biding his time before he would also then take out Maranzano. And become the big boss instead.
Yeah, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, if you know that he sold out his own boss, old boss, and got him killed, I wouldn't feel safe having him as my second in command.
No.
Because you'd be like, well, you did it once.
Well, exactly.
You might do it again, and now this time I'm the target.
You're going to do it again.
Interesting.
Yeah. So by late 1931, Maranzano did start to suspect that he was in a bit of danger with Lucky around. So he decided to try and get Lucky killed by hiring an Irish gangster. But this didn't go to plan because instead of killing him, the Irish gangster actually told Lucky of the hit on him. So I'm guessing this is because Lucky had already made like these ties with them. He'd already made friends with these guys. So obviously they probably had more of a respect for him than they did Maranzano.
Yeah, that is really powerful, isn't it? To think that they sold out the head of the Italian-American mafia in New York for Lucky.
Yeah.
He must have really had like strong relationships for that to work.
Yeah, it's that loyalty, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there you go. Treating people with respect and not being discriminatory helps. So yeah.
Exactly.
You never know if it'll save your life down the line.
Lucky's making waves in this.
He's so forward thinking.
Yeah. On September 10th, Maranzano had ordered Lucky and two of his associates to come to his office, but Lucky was sure that this was part of the plot to get them killed, so he decided to act first. So instead of going, he sent four members of a Jewish gang to the office disguised as government agents. They went in, they disarmed Maranzano's bodyguards, and then they stabbed Maranzano multiple times before shooting him and killing him.
Oh, that's personal, that is, to go with a stabbing.
Exactly.
Oh, he was mad.
They got in dirty first and then was like, okay, we'll shoot you now.
Yeah, that's, don't go for Lucky.
Honestly. So now Lucky's taken out two of his bosses and has become the undisputed boss of the Italian-American mafia in New York.
Mm.
So he's made his way to the top.
Yeah, a lot of bloodshed, but he got there.
Yeah, he's got there. So, with his new position in power, Lucky moved up his most trusted associates into prominent positions in the crime family. And he made Lansky, if you guys remember him, he made him his top advisor. So they were still buddies. They were still pals.
Aww.
Yeah, it's cute, right?
Lasting friendships. See, this is like, it's like us and that, what happened when we were 3 years old. You know, look at us now. Still pals. Sometimes you got to threaten your friends.
Just in a slightly different way, you know. We're not running a mafia or anything, but, you know.
Well, actually, that is kind of what we were up to this last year. Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, we don't talk about what happened. Yeah.
We don't talk about what happened in the last year.
No, it's a big secret. Yeah, don't.
So Lucky decided his way of keeping control would be to form this thing called the Commission. So this was a way for Lucky to forge bonds with all the other crime bosses so that he could keep an eye on them. So he got them all under his wing and was like, right, we're going to form this little commission. You've all got to follow what I'm saying, basically.
Keep your enemies close.
Exactly.
That's the rule.
So that's it. So by doing that, it's pretty smart because he's got them all involved, gives a chance for him to keep his hand on everything, you know, like we do as I say.
It's its own little government system, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
It's outside the law, but it's in its own boundaries.
Yeah. So an example of the kind of ways that the commission kept control was shown in 1935 when an American mobster, Dutch Schultz, was asked to stop his plans to murder special prosecutor Thomas E. Dewey. So he wanted to murder this prosecutor, but they were like, no, you can't do it, because they feared that it would cause too much of an issue with law enforcement, get the police on their back, and they didn't want that. So they didn't want it to lead to like a bigger crackdown on the activities of the mafia.
That's fair.
Schultz decided he didn't care and still continue to plan to kill him anyway. But before he could get a chance, Schultz was shot down in a tavern and died from his injuries the next day.
Oh.
So, you know, it was pretty much follow the rules or die. And that was the sort of like thing that Lucky had going on.
That is very like authoritarian regime there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he really had to follow the rules. With Lucky and his family in charge, they started taking over small-scale prostitution operations in New York City. But in June 1935, Assistant District Attorney Eunice Carter began an investigation into prostitution operations in New York that connected Lucky to the prostitution network. So she started to crack down on it and was like, right, okay.
Yeah, so she's like, I'm going to actually do my job.
Yeah, exactly. Go on, Eunice. So Eunice started investigating the flow of money in the New York, New Jersey prostitution network and began to build a case on the operations by collecting evidence from interviews with prostitutes and wiretaps. So she would like, you know, give them mics and stuff.
Definitely best people to, you know, get the sources from are the ones experiencing the absolute horror of that.
Yeah. On February 2nd, 1936, Eunice was authorised to raid 200 brothels in Manhattan and Brooklyn, and to reduce the likelihood of police corruption, she assigned 160 police officers from outside of the Vice Squad to conduct the raids, just to make sure, you know, there was nobody who was already corrupt in the police that could potentially let them know what was happening. So the raid happened, and they arrested 10 men and 100 women.
Oh, what?!
Yeah, a lot of women.
That seems fucking unfair.
I suppose the men were probably, maybe possibly the pimps.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? Women being exploited and then
there's
the issue of there was a punishment for it and then it stopped them from coming forward when things happened to them. And
yeah, it's horrible in a
real shit situation. 10 men to 100 women getting punished sounds about right for this world. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty normal. Standard.
Yep.
So, yeah, unlike previous raids, the arrestees were not released. They were actually taken to court and the judge set bails of $10,000. So obviously none of these people were likely to have $10,000 to get released. But she did it for a reason. They did it so that they could keep them to, like, try and get them to talk.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
So she built trust with a lot of the people arrested, and she actually managed to get some of them to give statements and reports about being beaten and abused by the mafia.
Oh.
And she convinced many of them to testify. So it was a shitty situation, but I think it was for the better for them, I guess, because she was trying to do it to get the mafia.
Yeah, this was more a plan to save them than harm them.
Yeah. And do you know what? I genuinely think it's because she was a woman herself. I think if it had been a man, it probably wouldn't have been the same.
Oh, 100%. Let's be honest.
Yeah. So, yeah, so she managed to get a few of them to testify, because she basically said, like, if you do that, then you don't have to go to jail. Like, you know, it's basically a plea bargain, you know?
Yeah.
So by mid-March, several defendants had implicated Lucky. They'd actually implicated him as the ringleader and the person who made the money collections.
Mm.
That made, you know, it so that they could put a warrant out for his arrest.
I was going to say, he's like, he's not actually done any jail time at this point.
No, I know. It's trying to get the evidence, isn't it? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
In such an organised crime, it's hard.
Yeah, the murders he's done and stuff, he hasn't pulled the trigger.
No, he's been smart about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in late March 1936, Lucky received a tip that he was going to be arrested and he fled to Hot Springs, Arkansas. Unfortunately for him, though, a New York detective was in Hot Springs on a different assignment.
What?
And had spotted him.
Small world.
Yeah. So he was just very unlucky.
Yeah.
So it didn't work with his name.
Yeah. Unlucky Lucky.
Yeah, so he got spotted, and then on April 3rd, he was arrested on a criminal warrant from New York. So then the next day, Lucky and his accomplices were indicted on 60 counts of forced prostitution. His lawyers then began a fierce battle to try and keep him from being extradited back to New York, but it didn't work.
Yes.
But he got extradited back to New York.
Good. I mean, forced prostitution is no small crime, let's be quite frank.
Well,
so,
exactly.
You know, good on him.
So I don't know why they thought they'd be able to stop him from being extradited back to New York, but, you know, they tried.
Because they're powerful. Powerful people have different rules than the rest of us.
That is true.
It's always worth shooting your shot.
Might as well try. So he was handed over to the New York detectives and he was transported back to New York for trial. It was quite funny because it said that because they had to do a changeover on the trains.
Mm.
And during that changeover, they had to be guarded by 20 local policemen because they were scared that he might be rescued. Like there might be an attempt to rescue him.
Yeah. God.
So they had to like proper build up protection around him. Like, no, no one's getting him.
He's ours.
Yeah.
Leave my Lucky alone.
So they arrived back in New York on April 18th and he was sent to jail without bail.
Oh, good. Because bail's nothing, is it, to him?
Well, exactly, yeah. He'd probably be able to pay it up straight away, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
On May 13th, 1936, his trial began. He was accused of being part of a massive prostitution ring known as The Combination. He was exposed for lying on the witness stand through direct quizzing and records of telephone calls. And he also had no explanation for why his federal income tax records claimed he made only $22,000 a year when he was obviously a very rich man.
Oh, rich people.
So they were basically saying, you know, this is dodgy, nothing you're telling us is true, you're going down.
Yeah, driving around in the nicest, most expensive cars, you know. Yeah. Wearing the nicest, most expensive suits and eating at the nicest, most expensive restaurants.
But you only make 22,000 a year.
sure, we believe you.
Yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So his trial came to an end on June 7th, where he was convicted on 62 counts of forced prostitution. And on June 18th, he was sentenced to 30 to 50 years in state prison.
Ooh, yeah.
But
oh,
this wasn't the end of Lucky's rule. And he continued to run his crime family whilst imprisoned.
No.
Yeah, he just continued on his normal, you know, giving orders. He was just relaying his order, because basically they had an acting boss, which was Frank Costello at the time. So he took over being the boss sort of on the outside, but he was getting his orders from Lucky in prison.
Yeah.
So he was at first imprisoned at a facility in Ossining, New York, but they later moved him to a different correctional facility, where he was assigned a job in the prison laundry. So he had a nice little job on the inside as well.
Aww.
Very wholesome.
Yeah, back to his roots.
Yeah, exactly. So during his time in this prison, he actually influenced to help get the materials to build a church at the prison, which became famous of being one of the only freestanding churches in the New York State correctional system.
Mm.
So, like, he still had so much power on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
It's just crazy.
Doesn't go away, does it?
No, he just kept going. He kept trying to do some legal appeals during his time in prison, but they kept refusing to review his case. They were like, no, we're not doing it. So At this point, he thought, do you know what? I don't think I'm going to get out of prison. So he actually stepped down as the family boss, and Frank Costello formally replaced him as the actual acting boss.
Did he step down because he actually wanted to step down, or did he think, like, forced out kind of thing? Because he's not going to get out of prison.
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't want to make Frank have to do what he did to his boss.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Either step down or I'll take you down.
I think so, because I can imagine it'd be quite easy to get someone killed while they're in prison, to be fair, which is bad. It shouldn't be.
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine it would be easy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bow out. At least you're alive.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously, his story still doesn't end here, though.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
We still have more interesting stuff to hear about Lucky. It just keeps going.
He's
going to
keep being a criminal inside. Surely not. Come on.
Obviously.
Oh.
Well, it's this bit actually is a really interesting bit of the story, and I was just amazed by it. So at this point, we've gotten to the time of World War II. The US government actually struck a deal with Lucky whilst he was in prison. So in 1942, the Office of Naval Intelligence was concerned about German and Italian agents entering the US through the New York waterfront. Knowing that the Mafia controlled the waterfront, the US Navy created contact with Lucky for a deal.
What?
Yeah. Basically, they reached a deal. In exchange for a lesser sentence, Lucky promised that the Mafia would assist the Naval Intelligence by letting them know if anything dodgy happens at the waterfront, basically.
Isn't that mad that they've had to go to the Mafia for help on this?
Yeah.
Oh, that's power.
Yeah. So basically, like, they knew that Lucky had allies in the Mafia on the waterfront, and they made, like, this deal to make sure that they kept it safe.
Yeah.
To stop anything getting out. It's just crazy. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what?
Yeah, it is mad. Like, it does kind of make you think, obviously, they're supposed to be mortal enemies. If you picture it, like, good versus evil.
Yeah.
You know, your legal system, your navy, your army, whatever, and then your mafia, your crime bosses.
Yeah.
It just, when you get into the details, you start to realize, like, oh, this blurs. This is blurry as hell.
Yeah, it very much does.
It's not black and white at all.
No. So, yeah, they ended up collaborating.
Oh my
is
God.
One way to put it,
yeah.
During World War II. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so by doing that, though, he got a lesser sentence. So on January 3rd, 1946, his sentence was commuted, but only on the condition that he did not resist deportation back to Italy.
Oh, so he's got to go.
Yeah, Lucky accepted the deal, although he still maintained that he was a US citizen, so he still thought, like, I shouldn't be deported, like, I am a US citizen. Mm. But they said, you know, it's this or nothing. Like, take your pick.
Yeah, stay in jail. Or go back to Italy.
Yeah. So on February 2nd, 1946, two federal immigration agents transported Lucky to Ellis Island in New York Harbor for deportation proceedings. And on February 10th, Lucky's ship sailed from Brooklyn Harbor to Italy. So February 28th, after a 17-day voyage, Lucky's ship arrived in Naples.
Mm.
That's quite a long old journey, isn't it?
Yeah. Makes you thankful for planes, doesn't it?
Yeah, honestly. So on arrival, there was lots of reporters, because obviously this is very exciting stuff. He told the reporters that he was going to go back to Sicily and just live his life out.
Yeah.
But we're still getting butts in this story, obviously.
Yeah. He doesn't sound like he's really done.
Yeah. Never.
A quiet Italian life for a mafia boss. What does that look like? Tell me now.
Yeah, not quite, is it? So in October 1946, Lucky secretly moved to Havana, Cuba.
What? Okay, so he had no intention of staying.
Nope. It literally was like, what, months after?
Yeah.
Couple of months after.
I promise I won't be back. And he's like, I'm just on your doorstep.
Yeah, literally. He did it just because he wanted to be closer to the US again. He wanted to start his reign of control over the Mafia, and he hoped that he'd be able to eventually sneak his way back into the US and just be able to live his life as he was. Doing his criminal stuff.
I mean, yeah, he thinks he's so lucky.
Yeah, honestly, he does. So once he moved there, he got his old pal Lansky to call a meeting of the heads of the major crime families, actually in Havana that December. This was called the Havana Conference, which I feel like I've heard of before.
Yeah, it does sound familiar.
When I wrote it, I was like, that sounds familiar.
Also, what a good friend.
Yeah, he was like, can you get all the people over for me, please?
He's like, sure thing, mate, sure thing.
Yeah.
Aw.
So this made me laugh. Apparently, the stated reason for why all the families got together was they wanted to see Frank Sinatra perform.
And maybe they did, Amy. Maybe it was both.
That was what they were telling people. But really, the real reason was to discuss mob business with Lucky in attendance. Like, that was what it really was.
And listen to some lovely music.
And, yes.
Bit of both. I believe them.
Of course. So they started this little conference up. It was in a hotel in Cuba. It lasted a little more than a week. But soon after the conference began, the US government learnt that Lucky was in Cuba because he had been publicly seen with Frank Sinatra.
What?
Yeah.
Frank?
Honestly.
Ooh. Mm. Damn. Well, they weren't lying, fully.
No, he was there.
Yeah. Although, damn. Well, we're going to do some digging into what Frank was up to.
I know. I was thinking that. I was like, he had some connections.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was seen with Frank Sinatra. He was seen in nightclubs. So he wasn't exactly hiding his presence, you know. He was out and about doing his thing.
Yeah.
So the US started putting pressure on the Cuban government to expel him back over to the US so he could be, you know, put back in jail. Because he went against his thing, didn't he? You know, they said, you know, it's back to Italy or back in jail. So
yeah,
they were like, mm-mm.
But surely once you send him back to Italy, it's then like the Italian government's decision. Can you really like exile someone to a country that you don't own? You know what I mean? Like, be like, you have to stay in Italy.
I know, yeah.
But I don't know how that works because it just seems weird to me. Surely it'd be up to the Italian government to be like, no, come back. We want you here. You have to be here.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know. I guess they just really didn't want him back involved in New York, I guess. So they were just like, no, let's cut this now.
Yeah, deal's up.
Yeah. So on February 21st, 1947, US Narcotics Commissioner Harry J. Anslinger notified the Cubans that the US would block all shipment of narcotic prescription drugs while Lucky was there. So they basically said, we aren't going to do any business with you as long as you've got Lucky there. 2 days later, the Cuban government announced that Lucky was in custody. They deported him back to Italy.
So they were like, you got to get back to Italy.
Yeah, get back there now.
And stay there.
But it is weird that it is like the US government that's dealing with it. They're the ones that are saying, get him back to Italy. It is weird.
Yeah.
So this is where things start to slow down a bit for Lucky now. So he does spend the rest of his life in Italy after this. So they get him back and he spends the rest of his life in Italy under very tight police surveillance.
They're like, you will stay here.
Yeah, you are staying here.
Imagine the money you spend on police surveillance just to keep one guy in Italy, though. That's mad.
I know. It's crazy.
What a threat he must be.
Well, when he first got back on April 11th, 1947, they did arrest him, the Italian police, and they sent him to a jail. But by May 11th, they decided just to say, stay out of trouble, and released him.
Please stop to being you. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, basically. But of course, he could never stay out of trouble. Mm. And by early July 1949, police in Rome arrested Lucky on suspicion of involvement in the shipping of narcotics to New York. He just didn't stop.
He's like, I'm gonna run the Italian gang that connects with the New York.
Exactly.
One.
He's like, if I can't be on the US side, I'll be on the Italian side.
Yeah.
It's fine.
He loves the mafia.
Yeah. But by July 15th, after a week in jail, he was released without filing any charges. But they did permanently ban him from visiting Rome. It's just crazy. They're just like, we're not gonna arrest you fully, but just please don't come back to Rome.
Please.
Keep your business elsewhere.
Oh my God, it's so mad to me that they're just like not able, well, I guess they are able to contain him, but they're really doing like a workaround just to like get what they want.
Pretty much, yeah.
But they're having to like plea with this person and they're the law.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know. So he carried on more. Obviously.
Obvious.
So on June 9th, 1951, he was questioned by Naples police on the suspicion of illegally bringing $57,000 in cash and a new American car into Italy. I don't know how he did that, but here we are.
So he went back to America? Maybe?
I don't know, honestly, but apparently he was doing more dodgy dealings. But after 20 hours of questioning, they released him without any charges. Then in 1952, the Italian government revoked Lucky's passport. I think they were just like, you know what, we really need to stop letting him go wherever he wants to go.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then by 1954, they applied strict limits on him. So he was required to report to the police every Sunday. He had to stay home every night. And he wasn't allowed to leave Naples without police permission.
Jesus. They really like...
It literally feels like they're putting him on a timeout.
Yeah. It feels like the weirdest sentencing of someone I've ever heard. Like, just lock him up if you're that bothered.
Honestly.
What?
Exactly. But they just won't. They just keep letting him out. But they're like, please stop doing these things.
Just mad.
Yeah. So we are finally getting to the end of his story now.
He's going to stop being a little twat.
Because he dies.
Oh. Yeah, that's the only way he stops.
This is how we get to the end. The man kept going. Yeah,
I think he would have kept going if he could have, for sure.
Genuinely. So we finally get to the end of his story on January 26, 1962, where he died of a heart attack at Naples International Airport.
What? Wait, he doesn't have a passport. What are you doing there?
Well, apparently he had gone to the airport to meet with an American producer called Martin Gosch to talk about a film based on his life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Weird place to meet.
I know. I feel like there was probably more going on here, but... So apparently, to avoid antagonising other Mafia members, he had previously refused to authorise a film, but after the death of his longtime lover, Igea Lissoni, he decided, you know what, fuck it, I don't care anymore, and decided to agree to it. He met this guy, talk about this film, and he had a heart attack and died.
Aww.
Yeah, it's crazy. I do wonder if he would have tried to have flown somewhere if he hadn't died.
I mean, it does feel very like, you could have met at a coffee shop or,
yeah, exactly.
You know, go out for dinner. But you're like, let's go to the airport. I don't know.
Yeah, dodgy. So yeah, he had a heart attack and he died. And then 3 days later, 300 people attended a funeral service for him in Naples. His body was conveyed along the streets of Naples in a horse-drawn black hearse. And then, with the permission of the US government, his relatives took his body back to New York for burial. And he was buried in St. John Cemetery in Middle Village, Queens. And more than 2,000 mourners attended his funeral.
Wow. Really did have, like, a lot of love around him. Like, a lot of people liked this guy.
He did.
2,000 mourners.
That is a lot.
I'd be lucky if I get two. Jesus.
Oh,
it shows there really is like a community in the crime.
There is. So, yeah, that, my guys, was the life story of Lucky Luciano.
What a life he lived.
Crazy guy.
He's quite the character.
Honestly.
Yeah. He just seems like he was never going to stop. There was nothing that would ever stop him.
No, he was happy to keep going.
And so early on he started this, like 14.
Yeah, he was only a kid, yeah.
Some people, I guess, just know what they want to do early on. They're really ambitious. But like, I know what I'm going to be when I grow up.
I'm going to be a mafia leader.
And boy, did he do it.
He did. And then some.
Yeah. He's not a great guy. I'm going to be honest. I don't. Some people like really romanticize these like mafia bosses. But, you know, you got to keep in the back of your mind that this guy has murdered people.
Well, exactly.
He's also, you know, abused and exploited women.
Yeah. He's not a good guy.
I mean, his antics are like funny in the sense of when you look back, you're like, Jesus, how did they keep letting him do it?
Yeah. It's just mad, isn't it? It's just that I think it must be just the power that, you know, the mafia does have.
Oh, yeah. If a normal person tried to do even just one of the things that he did, that'd be it for life. They'd be in jail. They'd be done. They wouldn't have like some weird curfew cat and mouse chase with the government. They'd just be like, you're done. Get out my face.
Honestly. It's, when I was just kept writing, like reading about him and I was writing about it, and I was just like, oh my God, this just never ends. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah, it's like you have the power to stop this in 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, stop it. And they're like, nah, let's try and give him another chance somehow.
Yeah. Did you enjoy?
I did. I really enjoyed hearing his wild life.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. Worlds apart from what we experience, isn't it?
What a life.
Wow, that was a great first story back after a little hiatus where we did some things that we're not allowed to discuss on this podcast. And now it's our favourite section, maybe. I don't know. I know your favourite is obviously Nice Notes, but this is a personal favourite section of mine on the podcast, which is the burning questions. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. It's just like a little refresher for anyone who isn't sure what that is.
And us.
Yeah. We say each other a question to like look up research and we discuss it with you guys now. Basically.
That's it. Simple as.
Yes.
And we hope to learn a little together. Hopefully.
Maybe.
That's the plan.
So shall I ask you yours first? Give me a little break.
Go for it. Yeah, rest those vocals.
Yeah.
They're rusty, so it's coming back, isn't it? I felt it through the episode too.
Yeah, I've got such a sore throat now. I'm going to be like...
Yeah.
So, Freya, what incentivizes people to join gangs like the Mafia?
Okay, let's get into it. So, one thing that is true in life is everyone is the hero of their own story. So with that in mind, it's a pretty complex thing trying to grasp how people justify joining the villains of the world. But then again, I guess some people might say that the Mafia and gang members are only villains when you look from the world with a law-abiding perspective.
Ah, that is true.
So for this answer, I'm going to try and switch the perspectives for the burning question and weigh up the narratives and thought processes that members of the gangs may go through to be enticed into joining this rollercoaster life path and committing crimes on behalf of the greater good.
Greater good!
That's the one. So, here are some of the top reasons why a mafia life holds some appeal. And coming in at number one,
dun, dun, dun,
is of course one of our favourite motives that we love to discuss when it comes to why people commit crimes. I mean, you know, we did do a whole ass season on this theme.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
And it's money. Yeah.
That is always a very big incentive, isn't it? People just love the money.
They do. Dollar dollar. So why on earth would money entice anyone to the dark side? Well, as we know, money gives you power, it gives you respect in this capitalist world, and who doesn't love a little bit of those things?
I just like being able to buy things.
Yeah, me too. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
So when we start digging into why crime holds perhaps more of a financial appeal than living on the straight and narrow, it kind of becomes a bit of don't hate the player, hate the game situation. And I don't want to get all like socialist on people and start bringing in complaints to our little podcast here, but you know, facts are facts, guys. Austerity, poverty, and crime are closely linked. Deprived areas have higher crime stats, and gang formation thrives there in these environments because when positive opportunities for prosperity and education are unavailable or withheld, there suddenly isn't as many paths forward in life that stay within the lines of the law, especially compared to the paths that those in the wealthy areas are privy to. So it's just some food for thought, but you know, if you can't get a good straight and narrow path to follow, there's other ways to go.
Yeah, that's why you just see it a lot, don't you, in areas that are just more deprived and don't have the opportunities.
Yeah, that puts you elsewhere. Reason number two is the Godfather classic.
Ooh.
Family.
Ooh.
Gang members and ex-gang members have said time and time again when interviewed about their life of crime that they felt a true sense of alliance to their fellow members because they were like family.
Yep.
It's no coincidence that those initial stages of becoming institutionalized within the gang is all about really keeping those new members sweet, making sure they feel super welcomed into the community, and to ultimately gain their unconditional support. So once you have created those almost unbreakable bonds, you start to become a force to be reckoned with, as members would do anything for each other.
It's all about that loyalty, isn't it?
All about the loyalty. But ultimately, it's the oldest trick in the book, and it's pretty much how any societal group forms. It's just at different levels, I think.
That is true, yeah.
And, you know, here I go again on these rants, but when you start looking closely, it becomes pretty clear how different members or groups of society become disenfranchised or isolated from the main systems that rule our world. So, you know, police brutality, poor education, limited representation, and so forth. These things that force people to feel like they're left out of the mainstream world, it makes them vulnerable. And it's only human nature that they want to find that security and acceptance elsewhere. And that's exactly what gangs prey on.
Make people feel wanted and needed.
They do. Everyone wants that. So, you know, making an effort to spread opportunities to everyone from all different walks of life is actually better overall because it helps stop people veering off into dark paths where they feel seen, accepted, and that they matter.
Exactly.
And then, reason number three, some people might be swayed to a life of crime. Although I think this one doesn't really count as being enticing, but the reason is peer pressure.
Ooh, how enticing.
Just like the reason why I wore neon tops, ugly leopard print belts, and fake Ugg boots as a teenager. Everyone around me seemed to be doing it. I thought it must be the right decision.
Hey, that was a cool look, right? It was high fashion.
It was something.
God, the traumatic flashback I just had.
I know, I was trying to give you that moment. I was like, Amy will love this throwback.
Oh no.
We all just thought we were making the right decision because we can't all be making wrong decisions together. But no, it was wrong. It was a terrible decision. It was not a good look.
Oh, fake Ugg boots. God, I think I went through about 25 pairs of those boots.
A week.
Yeah, literally.
They were so bad.
Just lived and breathed those shoes.
Oh, I know. Even in summer, I was gross. I
God.
Oh, no. It kills me. So yeah, as the saying goes, if your friends jump off a bridge, would you jump too? Yeah, probably. That's the truth. Peer pressure is a powerful thing, and it's not to be underestimated what it can make you do. And not just in the moment, but throughout every part of your life. Every single human is complex, and whether we like it or not, we all rely heavily on the herd. And the herd is quite a shit show. Usually with some of the flock running astray, random one-off sheep doing like crazy ass things for no reason. And then the biggest flock is just like leading everyone off a bridge to our imminent doom.
Oh, that was lovely.
I am very, very optimistic in this answer.
That was sunshine and rainbows right there.
Oh, you know it. You come here for that. Now, to wrap up this unstable rant of mine, money, family, and peer pressure are just three examples of probably millions as to why people join a gang. For some, it could be the excitement crime offers. Others, it's just to survive and pay off debt. Or perhaps for some, it's a combination of all the reasons we spoke about and more. I'm sure we could go on forever trying to list all the reasons why humans do anything, but don't worry, guys. I won't torture you with that, so I will call it a day here. But that's my answer.
Well, thank you for that.
I was hoping you would enjoy it.
I did.
I try hard.
Yeah, it was very good.
Thank you. So, Amy, now I have your burning question ready to go. Ba-ba-bum. So your question, Amy, is how much police corruption is there within the American mafia?
Well. I'm pretty sure, you know, we've all heard of police corruption involvement in many different ways.
Mm.
Especially with, like, the mafia, you hear a lot of, like, bribes.
Yeah.
Given to the police, be like, just turn away from this. This didn't happen. Accidentally lose evidence, all sorts of different things. Funnily enough, one of the biggest stories I found was surrounding the story of the mafia cops. So I've never heard of these guys, but apparently there are these two guys that were pretty well known for their shenanigans with the mafia and definitely are a big eye-opener to what other kind of police corruptions that could be going on behind closed doors.
I was going to say, the two things you don't want in one sentence is mafia and cops.
Yeah. Doesn't set up for a good going, does it?
No, that's some undermining the trust there.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you about these two guys. So we've got Stephen Caracappa and Louis Eppolito, and they were both New York detectives. Stephen had worked in the organized crime unit in Brooklyn from the late 1970s all the way up to 1992, where he retired with a disability pension. He also then went on to work on as a private investigator, and he also worked as a correctional officer in a women's correctional facility. So this guy, you know, he spent his whole life in law enforcement. He was always involved.
Yeah.
Then we have Louis. He was actually related to associates of the crime family, but he went on to apply to be in the police force in 1969, and he stated that he had no relations to anyone in organized crime, and he got the job. So obviously the checks weren't that great.
Yeah. It's not like we're the police and we could do any research into this. No.
They're like, oh, okay, he ticked no. So yeah, that's fine. So yeah, he went on to become a detective, and at one point he was actually suspected of passing on intelligence, but they just didn't do anything about it, and he just continued working in the force until the late 1990s.
Ah, okay.
So, let me tell you what their involvement in the mafia was, and it's pretty wild. So the stories that about them came from Anthony Casso. He was an American mobster and also a former crime family underboss. He enrolled into witness protection in 1994, and he began to tell some interesting stories about our two detectives. Apparently, one of the things they did in 1985 is he paid the two cops $375,000 in bribes and murder contracts.
Murder?
Yeah, murder.
Not small scale then.
No, not just a simple turn away, it's a you're involved.
Yeah, damn.
He stated that in 1986, that as a retaliation for an attempt on his life, the two police detectives kidnapped and handed over James Heidel, an associate of the Gambino family, to be murdered. So they facilitated the act of the murder. Later, again on Casso's orders, they actually murdered a guy called Bruno Facciolo due to Casso believing he was an informant. So they actually killed this guy.
Oh, that is so corrupt.
I know. And what's even scarier is that this guy's murder became really famous because they stuffed a canary in his mouth after they killed him.
Ah.
Like, considered to be some sort of message of being like, if you're an informant, you're going down.
Yeah.
There was another murder that they did of a guy called Edward Lino. So on November 6th, 1990, the detectives pulled him over in his car and they shot him 9 times.
They're just running their own course here.
Yeah. It's just scary, isn't it?
Mm.
So in 1986, Casso had another attempt on his life by a guy called Nicola Guido. And again, he asked the two cops to track him down to be killed. So they used the police database to find the people that he wanted to be killed.
Oh, no.
But unfortunately, the address they found was for the wrong guy. So this innocent man's address was then given to the mafia and he was shot and killed on Christmas Day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So they made an innocent man get killed because they just fucked up with the police database.
Just messed up. Bit of admin error.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, this is why police need like proper, what's it, monitoring. Like, this is crazy that they could do this. And
yeah,
people still can, like, let's be honest.
Well, you think about it, like, the first story he tells of them was like 1985, and then it goes on to like things they were doing in the late 90s. So this was something they were doing for like over 10 years.
Yeah, this is a whole other burning question. Police corruption.
Exactly, yeah. Then in the late 1990s, they conspired to kill a former underboss who had entered into witness protection. So, like, this is pretty brutal stuff. Like, they weren't just turning a blind eye to some dodgy activity. They were, like, full-on involved, murdering people. They were using their powers as detectives to help find people. And, you know, if someone's gone into witness protection, like, they should be safe.
It makes you realise that all these organisations, they're all run by people. I think sometimes we forget, we think they're just, like, an overbody, you know. Yeah, they just do their thing. The police just keep us safe, but the police are people. The entire organisation is people. People can be murky.
Yeah, exactly. Bad. So the two detectives were finally arrested in March 2005. They were charged with counts of racketeering, obstruction of justice, extortion, and 8 counts of murder and conspiracy. So these include the murders of James Heidel, Nicholas Guido, John Otto Heidel, John Doe, Anthony DeLappi, Bruno Facciolo, Edward Lino, and Bartholomew Borriello.
That's bad.
Yeah, few people that they were involved in the murder of.
I'm glad they're seeing justice, though. Like, I'm glad they're getting caught for
it. Yeah. So on March 6th, 2009, Eppolito was sentenced to life imprisonment plus 100 years, and Caracappa was sentenced to life plus 80 years.
Awful.
And each were fined more than $4 million.
That is crazy.
So yeah, it's mad. That's only 2 cops. Like, you can imagine how many other people were probably involved in, like, corruption in the police. So that's, like, 8 murders that they know of.
Yeah. Don't trust the state.
It's scary stuff, guys. So trust no one.
Come live on our farm in a cult with us. We'll keep you safe. We're not the mafia.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Hard reality, that
so
is.
So that was a cheery note, wasn't it?
I know. Whoa. Okay, Amy. Let's bring this back up as we close down.
Yes.
So now we'll end on a nicer note so that we're not leaving all doom and gloom thinking about how corrupt our whole world is.
Yeah.
So, Amy, do you have a nice note for this episode, for this week?
Well, you guys, you always know that I struggle with these, right?
No, do you?
Every time I'm like, what is there? I guess there is some nice things I've done recently, you know.
Yeah.
I've been on my first flight since COVID has existed. It was only from Bristol to Glasgow, but it was very exciting, a nice little holiday. And do you know what? It was just really nice to have like that feeling of normality again, getting on a plane. Yeah, it was just a nice time.
Yeah. My first one's like in a couple months. So I'm still a bit nervous. I keep asking everyone who flies. I'm like, what was it like? What did you have to do to get through the airport? But I guess you would, because it's UK based, was it a little bit easier, nicer? Or
yeah, I didn't have to do anything. It was literally just get on the plane, get over and that's it. Because yeah, it's not leaving the UK, so it was nice and easy, which was good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to do it, especially like if you're anything like me and you're a bit stressed about what the rules will be and how things will change by the time you leave. Yeah,
well, exactly, that's it.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Oh, good, nice note.
Yes.
I feel you.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your nice note?
So my nice note is, for some of you who listened previously to the old episodes, you'll know that I am very much dog obsessed. I am like...
Very.
I love dogs so much, so intensely. And I finally got my own puppy. I got a doggy.
Puppy.
And he is gorgeous.
Not so little.
Not so little. He's gonna be a big boy. He is a border collie, so he's really high energy. But it's lovely, like, having him, his companionship, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. I literally walk, like, an hour every morning now. I'm like, and I'm so happy about it. But I wouldn't believe it before.
It's a good reason to be out.
Yeah, he makes me so happy. I'm like, I don't want to take him out. I want to see his little happy face, throw a ball for him, and, you know? I love it. And yeah, it's so nice having his company. And I work from home as well, so he's just always there. And I'm a needy person. And
he fulfills the need.
Yeah. It's just a very needy household. And it's amazing. it's so lovely having him. His name is Ferguson. And he's just perfect.
So cute.
Yeah. In this world full of corruption, I just look into his little brown eyes and I'm like, it's okay.
The bestest dog out. That was a good, nice note. That was good.
Thank you. See, we brought it back.
Yay!
We're like, woo! There we go, guys. All the fun's back, and the murder, and us. And yeah, woo-hoo. We will not disappear between now and the next episode.
Maybe.
But we won't promise anything else because, you know...
That's as much as we can give.
Yeah, after what happened this last year that we can't discuss for legal reasons, but like... I'm just going to create like a massive mystery around what we were up to.
I was going to say, people are going to be so scared.
Yeah. Like, what? Amy went to Russia? What? Weird.
They're like, what?
Yeah, no. We will be back. And to prove we will be back, although I guess we did this last time, so it's not great proof, but we will tell you, entice
you. Which I mean, we have come back.
Yeah. So we didn't lie.
We didn't lie. Just took a bit of our time. Just a bit of time.
Yeah. It's a detour route through Russia and...
and other dark places.
Yeah. So yeah, to tease the next episode, episode 7, our theme of this is... Dun, 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 dun. Do you want to say it?
Hey, it's your episode. You say it.
Okay. It is cannibalism.
Yay!
I think I said that a bit too happy. I think I should have like...
should have been more cannibalism.
Yeah. I misread that one. Please don't crucify me for it.
I mean, I said yay afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, God, Amy. We need to reevaluate how we do this again.
Whoops.
This is why we disappeared. We're terrible podcasters. We yay for cannibalism.
I mean, it is always an interesting topic.
It is. It's one of those morbid curiosity things. We know, you know, that we all, no judgment here, we all kind of want to know.
Exactly.
It's a safe space, guys. Like, let's not kid...
safe space.
You want to know. I want to tell you. Let's get into it next week.
I'm very excited, guys.
So, until then,
have a killer week, guys.
Bye.